Support for The Morning Show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. WGTD is also supported by Carthage College, dedicated to combining an environment of reflection and self-discovery with a culture of high expectation, designed to allow students to uncover and ignite their potential. More information about undergraduate and adult education opportunities at carthage.edu. And we welcome you to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. In part one of today's program, we're going to be highlighting for you some of the exciting events that are coming up this weekend at the Fine Arts Weekend at Carthage College. And I look forward to welcoming several faculty colleagues, and we hope a couple of different Carthage students who are going to be playing a prominent role in the festivities and activities this weekend at Carthage. In part two of today's program, we'll be hearing from Pasquale Laurino, who is music director of the Racine Symphony Orchestra, and finding out about their concert coming up this weekend at the beautiful Francis Bedford Hall on the campus of the University of Wisconsin Parkside. In the meantime, we begin our conversation devoted today entirely to the wonderful world of fine arts by welcoming several different guests and in a couple of different installments as we make our way through the next few minutes. Again, this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, there are a whole host of events on the Carthage campus related to the world of fine arts and involving the departments of art and CDM, communication, graphic design, and theater and music, all deeply involved in the festivities. And joining me right now in the studios, Ryan Peter Miller, who is a visiting assistant professor of art, so representing the art department today, Laura Huracha, who is associate professor and chair of the communication and digital media department. And we have also in the studios right now one of her students, Jennifer Scarda, who is a senior majoring in graphic design. A little bit later on, we'll be hearing from Martin McClendon, who is a member of the theater faculty, and Ed Kawakami, who is one of my colleagues in the music department. But to the three of you, a preliminary welcome to the morning show. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Who wants to say a little word of overview about why there is something like the Fine Arts Weekend and maybe a little bit about its history? Laura.
Sure, definitely. The history of the Fine Arts Weekend, this is the second year that we're doing it, and I think that really we're trying to encourage and showcase, you know, the art of discovery that is the fine arts. So, you know, creativity is alive in every major at Carthage, and it's just kind of making sure that creativity is taught and nurtured for each type of major. It's not as often seen in the sciences or seen as important, but it's really important when they're trying to find scholarship, when they're trying to find new ways of learning. So when we have that as part of the liberal arts curriculum, I think to make sure and encourage that that fine arts is taught and nurtured, is this is just part of that whole package. So these activities are really meant for that to be to pay attention to that. Mm.
You and I were in the same room at a meeting when Carthage's vision statement was being discussed, and it was a beautifully crafted document, but I don't remember who it was who at some point pointed out that actually it didn't ever really say in so many words anything at all about creativity, although certainly the notion of creativity was woven into a lot of its principles. But that was also kind of an interesting example of a moment in which it's important for us to not only be creative, but to talk about being creative and make sure we all understand how important that is, no matter who you are or what you do.
Yes, that was Corinne Ness, who so eloquently pointed out that we did need creativity more to draw more dominance to that in that statement. And I absolutely agree with her that that needs to be, again, nurtured more. And activities like this for this weekend is really something that all students need to take a part of. So all of these activities are for everyone, not just people in the fine arts. So I hope that we can talk more about that.
Very good. So everything kicks off tomorrow afternoon, that is Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock, with a special reception and a performance sort of in line with it. And Ryan Peter Miller, who is visiting assistant professor of art, is going to tell us about that. So what's going to be happening at 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon?
Well, forgive me first. I've been told I have a voice for closed captioning. the first event, and I'm excited to be kicking it off with a theme of seeking truth, is a kind of collaboration between the dance department, specifically working with Stacey Pottinger and her students, doing a collaboration with the current curatorial exhibition called Click in the H.F. Johnson Gallery. And that's going to start off at 4 and go to 6. And there's about 20 solo performers, dancers that will be interpreting the work that's up. The work is a contemporary exhibit of photography. And by contemporary, I'm really talking about, and it fits well into our theme, non-traditional photography, kind of taking the photograph and expanding it into sculpture, into video, into interactive web displays. And so the students will have picked an individual work and will be specifically responding to those pieces.
And is that dance going to be happening right there where the pieces are?
Exactly, right in the space. There will be... I'll use the word cascade. You know, various students will kind of come in and do a performance, and they'll exit, and a continuous kind of line of students will be coming in and doing performances around and near the art.
Wow. It's beautiful. They did it last year. It was one of the most well-talked about events, and it's really amazing to see the spontaneous dance happening in front of the art pieces.
Very good. Tell us a little more about the pieces themselves, if you had a chance to take a good look at Click.
Of course I have. Yeah, I'm one of the co-curators. So the gallery director, Diane Levesque, asked me to do a guest curatorial. I did so with a colleague who teaches at the University of Central Missouri, Marco Rosicelli. We've been collaborating on various projects for several years now, all long distance. And so together we brought three different artists in. Jordan Tate, who works just out of Cincinnati, combining photography with sculptural forms. So they're three-dimensional objects where photography has been kind of inserted in a really kind of innovative, non-traditional manner. We also have Trisha Holt, who works just out of Detroit. Her work is a little bit performative. She includes herself as subject matter and then works with a process that I would refer to as re-photography, where she kind of takes a picture, uses it as a prop within the photograph, and then photographs it again. Oh. So there's these kind of meta-narratives that are happening. And then the third artist, Dina Kelberman, is working out of Baltimore, and her work is digital. We have several LED television screens that are working with slow animated GIFs, and they're very slow. So people that kind of come in and try to rush through the exhibit are going to miss some of the subtle nuance, and it's really exciting because she's using technology in a way that's kind of antithetical to the way that we think of technology as this kind of fast, accessible thing. And she's really using it to slow us down and make us think about the work in a very new way. So I'm really proud of the exhibit. Jennifer, who's here with us, helped to design the catalog, and it's a beautiful catalog. We've got a great essay from a Chicago curator that works at Waubonsie Community College. I think it'll be a nice event to bring people in to see the exhibit, but also experience it in this way through the dancers, that they probably wouldn't normally do that.
Terrific. And I just want to make sure I understand, is the dance in a sense fairly improvisatory, or will they have had ample time to really look at this work themselves and reflect on it before dancing about it?
It was, I think it was a 2 or 3 weeks ago, I met with Stacey Pottinger and gave the class a really kind of intimate, detailed description of all the work. And the students are picking specific work. So I think they've, from what I understand, been really working on a choreographed, specific response to each piece. So I don't believe that there's going to be really any improvisation happening in there. I think it's a practice piece that will be specifically responding to something that they saw within the work.
Sounds exciting. I mean, even apart from the dance, it sounds quite exciting. And then you add that element. Laura, you were saying this something like this happened last year and was quite effective.
Yes, it was just amazing to see because they're not at all the same time. So they seem to just kind of pop up in front of the art piece. So they really see influenced by the art. It's just beautiful.
Very good. We should maybe shift our attention now to your field, which is CDM communication and digital media, and that is what that's Jennifer's area of study at Carthage. And there is this sort of ongoing event happening this weekend that is going to showcase a lot of the most interesting work of some of your students. Tell us about that.
Sure. Well, I think that you mean the CDM Critique Works in Motion or Works in Progress, which is at 2 p.m. in the Neiman, because there's also a design competition that is kicked off at the starting event that the students will be working in teams and working towards a design challenge, and that will be presented at 1 p.m. on Saturday.
We should keep those things separate,
mm-hmm,
shouldn't we?
Right.
Let's talk about that first, the competition.
The competition.
And that's a new thing this year. Right?
Correct. And I can't give too much away because Jennifer's actually one of the participants, so the prompt of...
I can.
So the design challenge itself is being very much guarded as a secret. But the students will be working in teams to create and finish this challenge and then present on at 1 p.m. and they'll be winning teams. And we're very excited. It's not just for graphic designers. It's for an artist. It's for all different majors. Of course, anyone can be a part of it because it's just a creative prompt. So it's like, answer this question with a visual piece or any type of creative response. And during their presentation, then we'll decide who was the most creative. And so we're very excited about that.
And my understanding is it's designed very much to not only include CDM students,
correct,
and not even students who major in any of the fine arts, but it's preferred that somebody is in the mix who really comes from outside.
We're welcoming of any major who'd like to be a part of it and to kind of build on that teamwork, because I think part of the arts is also engrossing in teamwork and learning to work with others. And so part of that creativity is bouncing off each other. So it's a great thing to be a part of. So if any students are interested in it, they can email me if they're listening and we can add them to a team.
Very good. And then let's talk about this other matter, which is actually what I was more directly asking about, this event at 2 o'clock in which some specific work by specific CDM students is going to be showcased. Tell us about that.
So at the CDM Critique Works in Progress, we have a bunch of different students presenting their work in graphic design, public relations, communication thesis, screen media, and photography. So this will be students presenting their work in short presentations, and then we're actually going to have a live digital critique. So people will be responding by text message, so we can have like this feed of people's responses so we can view them automatically and give them to the students. So, you know, part of the process of this weekend is talking about seeking truth. So we're wanting students to understand that their work can always have, you know, constructive critique. And so that's what this is supposed to be, helping them work towards a good end product. Because students sometimes get frustrated that, you know, it's hard to have this final product that's done. So to be thinking about art as always in progress and in motion is a really good part of this critique.
I heard a saying many years ago, I don't remember who said it, but it was relating to music, saying, never forget, music is art. The paint is never dry. And the idea being that when you're in front of a choir, you're never done. I mean, there is always something to do in terms of polishing and shaping and continuing that experience for yourself and for the students that are singing in your direction. And you're kind of embodying that same principle here.
Right, and that's what I think is exciting for the students, because some of them are like, well, I was done with this project. Why am I presenting it? Like, Jennifer's going to present part of her project. I'll have her describe her Wes Anderson posters, where she has taken well, I'll let you describe it. How would you describe your Wes Anderson posters?
Well, the series originally started off a project I did in Professor Hiracha's History of Graphic Design class, and I loved the project so much I expanded it into a series of posters for Wes Anderson's movies. The Grand Budapest Hotel is the most recent one, reflecting it in a WPA Works Progress Administration style. And so that, I took that class probably a year and a half ago, and I'm still working on them. So that quote holds true to me, where a designer, especially as a student, never really knows when their work is done. So it's great to have feedback through the critique with Carthage students, Carthage community, and others. So
I will attest, I didn't put two and two together until right now. I saw those posters last year, and they're gorgeous. And so
thank you.
It'll be worth anybody to attend to see you talk about your process for those, because they're lovely posters.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Is that something you've had the opportunity to do much of? I don't mean the actual creation of it, but the presentation of it and the reception of this kind of feedback, not just from professors. I mean, how much has this been an experience for you before this?
Well, I'm a senior in my major right now, and part of our work as a senior in the graphic design department is doing a show of our work, our senior show. So it was presented last winter in December in the Hedberg Library. So we had a big gallery event. So my work was featured and hung in Carthage Community. So it was great to have people come and tell me some feedback and get some good exposure.
So Jenny presented a little bit early because she wanted to apply to grad school. So we let her do that, and she got accepted to one of her favorite grad schools. So that's exciting. Oh, you haven't publicly announced that yet. We're not going to publicly announce
that.
Now
I haven't.
Cat's out of the bag. Cat's out of the bag. Laura and Jennifer, chime in if you like. How much has technology really altered the whole notion of graphic design and how the work of graphic designers is done?
Well, technology is always going to be an aspect, but it's always going to start with the concept and sketches. So I always, when people come and talk to me about being interested in graphic design, prospective students, they say, oh, you do art on the computer. You know, and that, the computer is definitely part of it, but there's no button, I always say, that says make it look cool. You know, you always have to come up with this idea and then replicate it on the computer. So the concept is always the key, and drawing is always the key, which is what I make them do in history of graphic design, like Jennifer was talking about. But definitely the computer makes it replicable, and the computer makes it give it to the masses type of thing, but it's always going to fall back on coming up with that great idea. That's why in history of graphic design, it's a great class because it's still amazing the work that they've done that we have to study, starting with cave paintings, which my students love talking about cave paintings, but I find them very interesting. So, because you like that class, right, Jennifer?
Yeah, it was my most favorite class I've taken at Carthage, not just because of the projects, like I said before, that came out of it, but I love art history, and to meld it with such a modern thought of graphic design was really interesting to me.
Yes. So to be able to use the digital critique in a way, to use technology to kind of encourage the growth of their projects, I think it's going to be very exciting.
Wow. So just give us a sense of how many students we're going to be hearing from in this event on Saturday, and just sort of how wide the breadth is going to be.
I'm hoping for 12 with at least 2 minutes each, with 10 minutes for the communication thesis presentation. So, and the screening, we have two screen media students presenting their work that they did for Puerto Rico, and that the students went on a J-Term trip and they filmed the culture of Puerto Rico, and they put together one specific topic about Puerto Rico in their film. So I'm hoping for a wide variety. I'm getting responses back from students still, so I'm making sure they're all coming, but we're going to have a great variety of work to look at, and maybe even a speech. So I'm looking at a speech, so we have all the different majors in communication, all the different types of work, and photography as well. I have a student coming to talk about high-definition photography and his work of HDR, so lots of different variety. I didn't try to have too many graphic design students, but I can pressure them more. So I do have at least 6 graphic design students coming because I threaten their grades and things like that.
Good move. So that's Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock again, called Works in Progress. That's in the Neiman Theater, which is on the bottom floor of the Hedberg Library. Very good. For those of you just joining us, we are talking about the Fine Arts Weekend coming up this weekend at Carthage College, and we're making a little shift here in the studios away from the world of art and communication, graphic design, digital media, and into the worlds of music and theater, which of course are also represented in this weekend's events. So I'm really happy to welcome now Martin McClendon, who is a member of the theater faculty at Carthage, and Ed Kawakami, who is a colleague of mine in the music department, director of orchestral activities. So a warm welcome to both of you.
Thank you very much.
Martin McClendon, I know that part of what is exciting about this weekend's events is the presentation of something called Up the Hill.
Oh, yes.
And tell us what this work is about and why it is an especially exciting ingredient in this weekend's schedule.
Sure. Well, those of you who hopefully have been following Carthage Theater for the last 7-8 years or so know that we've been building a guest artist program called the New Play Initiative. This is where we premiere a work, an original work that's been commissioned by Carthage College for our students and faculty to actually develop and create. And so each of those playwrights has been somehow nationally prominent. This year, The work is Up the Hill, which is by Keith Huff, who's becoming more and more fabled as a TV writer. You know, Mad Men, House of Cards, and several new shows that he's currently collaborating on are but a few of his credits, as well as a huge Broadway hit called A Steady Rain, which started in Chicago. He's a Chicago playwright and then moved to Broadway. So Up the Hill is sort of hot off the presses from Keith Huff. And we have had the really good fortune to work on this show for about a year now, actually. And so the premiere last week was a very exciting event for us. The play is fantastic. And so this is the second weekend and final weekend of Up the Hill, which coincides with the Fine Arts Weekend, again, making for a sort of a 360-degree experience of art here, where you can come to Carthage, you can see dance, you can see graphic design, you can hear music. You can see the show in the gallery, and you can also take advantage of this world premiere event.
How much has Keith Huff written for the stage versus the screen?
Well, actually, Keith started as a playwright. He worked for years in Chicago on a day job, as he puts it, while he was a struggling artist and playwright. So he has a long legacy of works in Chicago, especially. And I'm not sure exactly where his big breakout came, because I know he started working in L.A. as well in the last 5-10 years. But again, A Steady Rain was really the thing that skyrocketed him in terms of playwriting. He's also written several other plays for Looking Glass Theater, also worked with Milwaukee Chamber recently in a play called The Detective's Wife. But Steady Rain was picked up and taken to Broadway and starred Daniel Craig and Hugh Jackman. I don't know if you've heard of those guys.
But, a little bit.
Yeah. So obviously got, you know, the big treatment on Broadway. But yeah, he's an incredible wordsmith, and you can tell in Up the Hill that this is a man who has spent his life, and it's his passion, putting words together in the most efficient and artistic way possible.
And it must be really exciting to have him coming to campus this weekend. Tell us the ways in which people have the opportunity to meet him and hear from him, aside from experiencing this work of his called Up the Hill.
Sure. So we do have this other event, which we're calling the Keith Huff Sneak Peek. So at 4 o'clock on Saturday, you know, Keith's been working on several other series. There's a show on ABC called American Crime that's coming out. And also, you know, more and more of these media companies are becoming content generators. For instance, House of Cards is a Netflix show, right? It's not on a network. It's on an actual... It's on a company that just provides, you know, videos. So he's also been working with DirecTV on a show called Full Circle. So he is the executive producer on the second season of Full Circle, which is a really cool concept show. It's airing on DirecTV, only on DirecTV, or at Carthage on Saturday. So on Saturday at Carthage, you will see the first episode, a sneak peek. It doesn't even have like credits on it yet or anything like that. It's sort of the final cut before they do that editing and insertion of credits and everything of the first episode of the new season of Full Circle. We'll be showing that at 4 o'clock in our Nieman Theater, which is the media theater in the downstairs of the Hedberg Library. So it's a really crazy show where a chain of characters goes through 10 episodes. The first episode has two main characters. One of those characters travels to the second episode and meets another character who then travels to the next episode. So it's sort of linked all the way back, and then it comes full circle at the end. And as with all of Keith's work, it's a little bit gritty, but it's also humorous. You know, it's a crime drama, but with some chuckles too. In that sort of vein, it's a really cool show. I have seen it, seen that sneak peek. So I got a sneak peek of the sneak peek. But yeah, Keith will be there introducing his show, doing a little Q&A afterward, it's gonna be great.
Wow, sounds very, very exciting. And again, the performance of Up the Hill is when?
Right, so that's actually Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night. 7:30 is the showtime on all shows. You can reserve tickets by calling our box office at 262-551-6661 or emailing theatertickets@carthage.edu and go ahead and get your tickets now for those three nights. And obviously Friday and Saturday night are also coinciding with the Fine Arts Weekend, so you can make a whole day of it or weekend of it at Carthage.
Very good. And last and certainly not least, but it happens to be the final event of the weekend, of the Fine Arts Weekend, is a concert that's happening Sunday afternoon featuring Carthage's Chamber Orchestra under the direction of the newest member of our music faculty, Dr. Ed Kawakami. First of all, it's great to welcome you to the morning show for the very first time, the first of what I hope will be any number of appearances. Tell us about what makes Sunday afternoon's concert especially exciting and a very appropriate addition to the Fine Arts Weekend.
Absolutely. It features one of our premier students, just like most other Carthage students. Jenna Dahlke, who's a fantastic oboist, is also a double major and incredibly involved across campus. But it features her as the 2015 concerto competition winner. She'll be performing Mozart's oboe concerto in C major, which by the way, I'm formerly a flautist, and the flautists claimed that concerto for themselves for about 130 years before it was rediscovered at the Mozarteum in Salzburg. But that's the capstone. She's the featured member of the orchestra for that concert. We're also performing several other works, the Schubert Unfinished Symphony, which is just an unbelievably gorgeous work. I don't know why he never finished it, but it's he lived on for another 6 years, and he composed another symphony and a sketch of another one after that, so I have no idea. We're also doing Respighi's Ancient Airs and Dances, Suite Number 1.
Love it.
That's a gorgeous piece. It's a fun piece. And we're also tagging on a little surprise at the very end, which should be a lot of fun.
So what is especially challenging about this kind of experience? I mean, for instance, for Jenna and for the orchestra and for you as the conductor, when you are putting together a gifted yet obviously relatively inexperienced musician with an orchestra under these circumstances?
Well, you know, the skill of accompanying a concerto, a soloist, is a skill that doesn't get developed as much as perhaps we ought to. It's a very exclusive thing. It's a huge kudos to Jenna for winning the concerto competition. If to put it into perspective, for her to be able to solo with an orchestra, for anyone to be able to solo with an orchestra, there's perhaps one opportunity per year at any higher education institution for one person to perform with an orchestra. So on the flip side of that, of course, is that the orchestra isn't able to practice this skill except for once a year on one piece, whereas we perform 6, 8, 10 pieces over the year. So it's a very exclusive thing. It also poses a challenge. The orchestra has to be very flexible. They have to be very collaborative. The soloist is whom we are in service to for the entire work.
Right. So this is as much a learning experience for the orchestra as it is for Jenna.
Oh, Jenna is a rock star. She's got this down solid. Yes, it is absolutely a learning experience for the orchestra as well, and they're doing wonderfully well. But again, it's something that we don't have practice doing, but it's wonderful.
Terrific. So remind our listeners of when and where the concert takes place.
Sunday at 1:30, Carthage campus in the Siebert Chapel, and I hope everyone can make it.
Very good. So that'll be Sunday afternoon at 1:30, and that is essentially the grand finale of a very, very busy weekend of all kinds of different activities, with a kickoff reception at 4 o'clock tomorrow. That's Friday afternoon in the Johnson Art Gallery, which will also include a dance presentation, as we heard earlier, a cross-referencing of this intriguing photographic exhibit with dancers lending their own interpretation. We remind everyone again about the theatrical presentation of Up the Hill, and Keith Huff's presentation as well, which is when?
He will be screening that first episode of Full Circle at 4 p.m. on Saturday in the Nieman Media Theater in the Hedberg Library.
And, of course, earlier that afternoon will be other presentations, primarily by the CDM program, and then, of course, the aforementioned Chamber Orchestra concert on Sunday afternoon at 1:30. And if you want more information or want further reminders or clarification on anything that we've talked about, you can certainly go to Carthage's website, which is carthage.edu. And if you scroll down to the front page of the website, you should find something to click on, which will bring up all kinds of information about the Fine Arts Weekend. Also, you can go to the thing called The Bridge on the Carthage website, which always has all the latest news releases related to events on campus. Martin McClendon is from the theater department at Carthage. Ed Kawakami from the music department. Gentlemen, I thank both of you for being part of today's morning show here on WGTD.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we have part two of today's morning show coming up now, a conversation with Pasquale Laurino. And for this portion of WGTD's morning show, I'm really happy to be connecting with Pasquale Laurino, who is music director of the Racine Symphony Orchestra. And he is on the podium in front of the orchestra for a couple of very special events, including the upcoming youth concert and a concert coming up this Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock in beautiful Francis Bedford Hall in the Rita Talent Pick and Center for Arts and Humanities on the campus of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, a concert which is titled New Voices. And we're going to be finding out a little bit about the musical offerings that are going to be shared on this particular program. Maestro Pasquale Laurino, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Good morning, Greg.
It's good to be talking with you. I heard such good things about the concert in December, and I'm happy to be talking with you now about this concert that's coming up on Sunday. First of all, say a word about this lovely room in which the Racine Symphony will be playing, and I'm assuming that this is for the first time that the symphony will be performing there. Am I wrong?
It is, in fact, for the first time. Last night was the first opportunity that I had a chance to hear the room finished up. I had the privilege of going in prior to the opening with a hard hat on, and I have to say that it is one of the most pleasant and acoustically perfect places that I've ever had the opportunity to perform in.
And, of course, it's lovely to look at as well, but of course for a musician, what matters of course so much more is indeed the really exceptionally lovely acoustics of that space. Did it take some getting used to for you and or the orchestral musicians?
Not at all, actually. It's one of those places that is gratifying for the audience to hear the music because it has a beautiful, warm sound, but also a clarity on the stage that allows the musicians to hear one another across the stage. And for me to be able to get the whole so clearly defined is really a rare bird in the annals of concert halls, and so this is a great opportunity to play in this new and wonderful space.
Very good. I know a lot of people are excited about it. The concert is titled New Voices. Explain that intriguing title.
Well, for one, we have a pair of solo voices that we are considering a new Alicia Bernesch soprano who will be singing the Barber and the Handel is new to the orchestra, so an introduction for our audiences of her exceptional talent. I've worked with Alicia quite a bit in Milwaukee at the Skylight Opera Theater, but I'm just delighted that she's able to do this program that's so perfectly suited to her voice. Nathan Wasilewski is a tenor who has appeared with the orchestra before, so we're welcoming him back, and also the choral forces of the Choral Arts Society are on this program, which we're delighted to collaborate with after it's been about a 5-year period since we've had a chance to collaborate. So these were all reasons to use new voices, in addition to the fact that we'll be premiering a piece by Christina Spinet, and so her voice will be heard in absentia, but I'm sure people will enjoy this this new work as well.
Let's talk about that for a moment, and it's not every day that one has the opportunity to hear a brand new piece of music on an orchestral concert. Tell us about the composer and this piece and how they came together with the Racine Symphony, in a sense.
Well, Christina is trained at Juilliard, and her music came to us the way a lot of composers are using social networking and the internet to self-publish their own music. Used to be the big publishing houses, if you could get them to represent you, were really the only way that that you would be able to distribute your music. Christina Spinet has been able to promote her own material by using YouTube and using her own website, And we received a solicitation letter to take a look at, you know, some new music that she was doing. I did that. I saw this string work, about 11-minute piece that I thought would be perfect on the program to finish out this this wonderful program and also bring us a little bit closer to music of our time, and it certainly fits that bill.
What does it sound like?
Well, it is a it's a tonal piece, one that's built on motivically with a two-note motive that expands and grows and gets faster and leads to somewhat arousing a conclusion, but it uses the color of the string sound extremely well. It seems to almost augment the sound of the orchestra by way of the divisis, all of the sections, rather than just the one violin part, one viola part, one cello part. All of the parts are split into various divisis. So even though the orchestra has not increased in size for this particular work, it sounds with its complicated network of interplay between the voices. It sounds like a much busier and fuller piece.
It sounds like a very rich composition, and despite the fact that we're only hearing strings, it sounds like we won't feel like we're missing much. I mean, we won't sense where are the woodwinds, where are the brass. There'll be enough for us to enjoy just from this carefully crafted work for that showcase the strings.
Indeed, that's our hope. I'm pretty sure that people will come away with that impression.
Very good. The Choral Arts Society, their role in this, along with your two soloists, is in a choral work that does not show up all that often on concert programs, but is a real gem from the Baroque era. Tell our listeners about it.
Well, it is the Ode to St. Cecilia, a work that Handel wrote in English in the latter part of his career. He of course, was a tremendously prolific composer, but he is in top form in this piece, and one that is dedicated to the patron saint of musicians. So it, in a very real way, gives an opportunity for him to dedicate by the way he handles all of the forces to the magic of music and the concept that music was there in the forming of our very universe and attributes all of the affections of the doctrine of affections to the various instruments that we have, the warbling flute, and we have the shrill violins, and those are all noted, the organ, the lute, and of course the human voice that stirs emotion in sound and in word.
Yeah. And what a treat for us to be able to hear it, especially in a lovely space like Francis Bedford Hall. Also on the concert is a real masterwork from the early 20th century by the great American composer Samuel Barber. And this will, of course, be a work that features in a very special way soprano Alicia Bernesch. Tell us about this work and about this soprano who will be singing it.
Well, the Barber work is, yes, it is a masterpiece. It is really one of the most beautiful settings of the English language, I think, that you can imagine, certainly in the 20th century. It is scored for a small orchestra of strings and a few individual wind players, a pair of horns, and one single note in the triangle, which is a bit humorous, but we follow Barber's direction to the letter and do include that. The setting is James Agee is novella, it is the prelude to this book that is set about a simpler time, the summer in in Knoxville in 1915, people on porches, the family dynamic, all seen through the perspective of a child, and how that family dynamics, the nurturing of and support of the family is so crucial, but also how in a way, through a child's perspective, everything is heightened. The noises of the car going down the street are referenced, and horses on the cars, when cars and horses coexisted. It brings us back to that simpler Americana time clearly, and I think poignantly says at the end that even though all of these familiar influences are there, that the child will never be defined, will never be told who they are by their parents, will come to their own sense of identity as they mature.
Tell us about soprano Alicia Bernesch, how you made your acquaintance with her, and it sounds like at least a time or two you've collaborated at the Skylight Opera. Is that where you two met?
Indeed. I think we did first a premiere, actually, of a set of operas together by Richard Wargall, called the Ballymore Trilogy. And and then we did Lucia de Lammermoor. She was my Lucia when I conducted there, and a couple of other concerts and instances. We did Rape of Lucretia. So she's been very involved through different productions, and I couldn't wait to do some concert work with her, because she has this terrific, not only this wonderful voice, but this terrific connection. She understands so well what she's singing. She just becomes those characters, and to be able to do that in a concert venue, I think, is something that I wanted to show our audiences.
Very good. So three different works on Sunday afternoon's concert. That's Sunday, the 8th of March, 3 o'clock in Francis Bedford Hall on the campus of the University of Wisconsin Parkside, the Racine Symphony Orchestra, under the direction of Pasquale Laurino. Maestro, I wanted to take a couple of minutes to talk about something else that is on the orchestra's calendar a little bit later in March, and that is the fifth grade concert, which has become a real staple of the orchestra's season and a very important part of your mission. And there's something about this upcoming concert that the general public needs to know about.
Well, this is the Compose This concert, which is a program conceived by Jim Stevenson, our composer in residence this year for the Racine Symphony. He's out there working with young people in the area on their compositions, and we thought we'd have used in the past instrumentalists. This year we decided on a composer. For this concert on the 17th, we're doing his work, which is scored for individual instruments, but is also uniquely gives the audience members an opportunity to compose, to create a piece of music themselves, much the way composers would make decisions related to instrumentation and tempo and style. The young people get a chance to do that, and then lead the orchestra through this composition that they have collectively decided on.
Very good. What an exciting experience for everybody who's going to be there.
Indeed, it's great fun, and of course, slides and banners with all of the instruments' names, and it is very well conceived for fifth graders. Although we invite the general public to come, and I say that last year actually Jim conducted this program with the orchestra, and I had the chance to see him work the nuts and bolts of it. So I enjoyed watching it from that perspective, too. So I'm sure it'll be fun for all.
Very good. So remind our listeners of where that concert takes place and what people should do, that is, members of the general public who might be interested in coming.
Well, the specifics can all be found on the Racine Symphony website, but on the 17th of March, there are two programs in the morning, and I don't want to get those programs wrong in terms of time, but it's so consulting the website would be the best thing. But it's Grace Church is where it happens, which is a marvelous place to play for sight lines, and also the fact that we can have these big screens illuminating the different instruments as we go.
Excellent. And real quick, tell us what happens then to finish out the symphony's current season.
The final work on the symphony in April will be our program, and this has become an annual event for us, the side-by-side, where we have young people in the orchestra joining us in a masterwork of Johannes Brahms, the variations on the theme of Haydn. We also have the winner of our youth competition, a very talented violinist this year playing Sarasate Zagorneweisen, a real fireworks of a work, as well as the Cherubini, very rarely performed symphony, the Symphony in D of Cherubini. So we have a lot of great music to look forward to.
Excellent. In the meantime, we want to remind people most immediately and urgently about the next concert of the Racine Symphony, which is this Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Sunday, March 8th, the Racine Symphony Orchestra playing in Francis Bedford Hall, an absolutely exquisite space for making music. That's in the Rita Talent Picken Center for Arts and Humanities on the campus of the University of Wisconsin Parkside. And for information on Sunday afternoon's concert or anything else coming up with the Racine Symphony, you're invited to go to their website, racinesymphony.org, or to call 636-9285, 636-9285. And the music director of the Racine Symphony Orchestra, Maestro Pasquale Laurino. Maestro, it was great to speak with you again. Thank you so much for joining me today on The Morning Show.
Thank you, Greg.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, a couple of different interviews, including one with Mark Adams, the author of a very intriguing book called Meet Me in Atlantis, My Obsessive Quest to Find the Sunken City. Also, we talk with Doug Instanis about the current play at the Racine Theater Guild called The Dixie Swim Club, a beautifully crafted play about friendship. WGTD is supported by Carthage College. Dedicated to combining an environment of reflection and self-discovery with a culture of high expectation, designed to allow students to uncover and ignite the potential. More information about undergraduate and adult education opportunities at carthage.edu. Support also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Our weather forecast calls for sunny and very cold conditions with a high of 14 degrees, wind chill of 20 below today. Clear tonight, low of 1 below, but tomorrow sunny and we warm to 29 degrees, upper 30s by Saturday and Sunday.